Welcome to Alphabet Scoop, episode 14. I'm your host, Stephen Hall, and I'm joined once again by Abner Lee. How's it going, man?
Hey, this is a chill week.
Yeah, it has been a very chill week. It's actually been probably one of the slowest weeks in terms of like Google Stories and Google News of the whole year so far. It's been, I guess maybe that's also just kind of comparing it to the last 2 weeks, which have been a crazy roller coaster of Pixel 3 rumors and leaks and renders and all that jazz, which we've been talking about for the last 2 weeks. But we're going to do our very best to avoid the Pixel 3 coverage this week and talk a little bit more about other topics and other products that Google may or may not be launching in the coming months and years, I guess. So I reached out on Twitter yesterday. It's been a slow week, so I just asked if anyone had any specific topics that they would want to hear us talk about this week. And so we're just going to have a chill 1 hour show just talking about, you know, our thoughts on the Pixel Watch, you know, potential Pixelbook successor, AR projects that Google's working on, all the cool stuff that we don't really have that much solid information on yet, but it'll just be fun to chat about. But first, I thought it'd be good if we did a little bit of a recap on some of the most popular stories on 9to5Google this week so that we at least can, you know, chat about stuff that's new and relevant and, although maybe not that exciting, popular at least for 9to5Google readers, which was, I guess, the top three stories or a few of the more important stories that kind of picked up traction were material theme redesigns for Android Messages, Google Podcasts, and the ad settings page. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that, Abner?
So yeah, the material theme is the theme of this week's news. So it started off with Android Messages. So Google's official RCS client, as you all may know, we were able to enable the Google material theme for the app in our usual APK insight. So it's very much in line with the material theme apps we've already seen. The most notable aspect is how Messages is centered in the top. It adopts a white theme. The only hint of blue is in the new oval fab button. So that's pretty cool.
Notable that they're keeping around the colors for the different like people that you're messaging, you know, how it has that.
I hope so, because otherwise it's going to be a super boring app.
Like, I know.
People like their custom colors, their changing filters and labels and Gmail colors. So yeah, so far it appears to be broken in what we've enabled, but that could just be because we enabled it. But hopefully, in the end, it makes it. So other features we saw was a new advanced search filters. This is actually kind of cool. You can filter content by images, by videos. And then the other thing is a GIF search, because we always need quicker and quicker access to GIFs. So as for when this will launch, we don't know. This was the first time we've been able to see and activate the material theme. So this could at least be a few more weeks of iteration, a few more versions. So yeah, that's the Android Messages news. Other material theme things we saw was Google Podcasts got even more material. They finally added like dedicated episode pages. So in the past, you only, when you clicked on the podcast to see the show notes, you would be taken to the main listing, to the main list of podcasts. But now you can actually see a dedicated page for the episode with all the show notes listed. And we also saw the new icon, which we also think will be for the upcoming dedicated app on the Play Store. So
yeah, we know that pretty much for sure at this point. Right, especially after today's teardown.
Yeah, the Google app, it explicitly states that there is going to be a Google Play app, an app in the Google Play Store. Again, we don't know much more than that. We don't know if it's a shortcut, if it's just an icon that opens the experience in the Google app. but hopefully it's like a dedicated experience. And maybe it comes to iOS as well, since if Google Play Music is losing podcast functionality in the long future, iOS users need a free cross-platform sync podcast solution.
Yeah, that'd be nice. For some context for those who don't know, Google recently launched Google Lens on the Play Store, but it's essentially just a shortcut link, basically, for adding a shortcut to Lens to your home screen. So it's not really a standalone app. So launching Google Podcasts the same way, basically being a shortcut to the podcast like section of the Google app would probably be the most likely scenario, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, it's gonna be weird if they doubled up, if you're gonna get the two identical experiences in both the Google app and like a separate app. But anyways, it is Google. Yeah. They are known for two of everything.
Yeah.
So yeah, in our Google app teardown this week, that was one of the major things in podcasts that we saw. But the big two topics here are Google is switching to color-based labels. So right now, there are 8 Google Assistant voices. They're called Voice 1, Voice 2, Voice 3, etc. But now, from what we've been able to enable, Google is switching to colors. Each voice will be referred to by a color, so like red, orange, blue, pink, whatever. And there's this new like carousel interface for picking the voices with this cool animation when the sample plays. So this appears to be the direction Google's going to. And this is so much better than Voice 1, Voice 2, where there's like absolutely no distinction. And like going into the future, hundreds of covers, hundreds of voices. It's like, as Sundar said at I.O., the goal is to create a voice for every dialect, for every language that sounds unique.
Right, right.
So much to go.
So Dylan was able to enable this, right? Or like, and so has he actually used it? Do we know, like, are these colors, are they supposed to somehow kind of represent the kind of voice that they are? Like, is the red voice like a darker voice, or is the, you know, like,
that'd
do you
be
know?
Cool. No, that'd be cool. Okay. But from the moment, from it appears to be a straight shot, like color one is voice one is red, voice two is the next color on the list. Like, it just appears to be arbitrary.
For the moment, at least.
For the moment, at least. But that'd be cool. Like, color personalities. That'd be fun. That'd be really fun.
Yeah, it would. What else do we see in the Google app this today, I guess?
So we have to go back to the Pixel 3.
For just a minute.
For just a second. So specifically, last week in Android P Developer Preview 3, something called Dreamliner was spotted by the folks at XDA. So this is appears to be a reference to a wireless charging dock, or like a line of them. So this service called Dreamliner appears to be like the support app to make these wireless charging docks work. So there appears to be like native support in Android P for manufacturers making wireless charging docks. So of course, there are devices with wireless charging now, but this appears to be Google's implementation on like adding it as a first-party feature for other devices and presumably the Pixel 3.
So I wanted to mention this. Dreamliner may or may not be a reference to the Boeing 787.
Definitely.
And another thing, obviously they're naming it after something, but... Yeah. What's interesting to me is the name Dreamliner kind of makes sense if you think about a wireless charging dock as something that you would like sit next to your bed and let your phone charge on overnight.
Dreamliner.
So I don't know. Maybe that's a stretch, but I made that connection when I thought about it. It's like it's a carrier for your phone while you sleep.
Oh, that's perfect. Because the original, it was originally called Daydream, before the virtual reality headsets, with like the Nexus 4, there was that wireless charging dock, and yeah. when you placed your phone on the dock, the animation was called a Daydream before the name was repurposed. So they're sticking with this dream motif. So that definitely makes sense.
Nice. But, yeah.
And yeah, in this Google app, we saw. So it's the at a glance widget on the Pixel launcher, but also on all other devices to the Google app widget. So it looks like when you charge your phone on this wireless charging dock, you'll be able to see like a charge status or battery status or something like that light in the at a glance widget. So again, this is still very early days for what we've been able to uncover, but this appears to be some kind of like just a status, a quick way to see what the battery percentage is or how it's charging. So it's something like that. So that's like the basic idea concept. It'll fit right next to the current calendar appointments, if there's any, or the weather widget thing in at a glance. So this is like, the other grants widget is synonymous with the Pixel launcher still. And it was like a key part of the Pixel 2's redesigned launcher. So like, if you take this to a logical step, I can clearly see the Pixel 3, like this being like something for the Pixel 3.
Yeah, for sure. Although didn't we recently learn that the at a glance widget was kind of being broken out to be potentially available on third-party phones?
Yeah. So again, like the rumor from the Android PDP3 code listings, it definitely suggests that this is a multiple manufacturer thing. It's just not the first party Google accessory. So it definitely makes sense for other phones to be able to tap into that widget in the future.
Yeah. All right. Well, that pretty much, I think, covers it for all of the kind of more important stories of the week. It was pretty much all about like Google Material theme redesigns. I mean, those seem to be pretty popular with our readers. I think people are really excited to see the Material theme kind of slowly make its way throughout the different apps. You can head over to 95google.com. We have a full list actually of all of the apps and services and websites that Google has that have been updated with its new Material theme redesign, and you can, we're just updating that list as we discover more and more things as we did this week. So thanks, Abner. I think that's a pretty good summary of some of the more important stories this week. Next up, I wanted to talk about the Pixel Watch, which is, I guess we don't really have that much to go off of it even really existing. But I guess one of the more solid pieces of information we have is Evan Blass, the renowned leakster who has been leaking phones from every OEM for years. He said that this was back in early May, that he heard from a source with quote high confidence that Google's planning to launch its first Pixel branded smartwatch alongside the Pixel 3, which we've seen leaked since then, obviously, as we saw the last couple of weeks, and also some second generation Pixel Buds. But before we get to Pixel Buds, I just want to talk a little bit about Pixel Watch and maybe, you know, just chat a little bit about, you know, what we expect for it or what we want to see from it. What are your initial thoughts in that? Abner.
So from what we definitely know at I.O., there wasn't a lot of Wear OS news, but there was an interview, I forgot which publication got it, it was with Google and Qualcomm, basically like confirming that there will be a new chip for the upcoming device launches later this year, Snapdragon 3100 or something like that. Basically, it's an updated chip that, which is something sorely needed, especially when you take a look at like the Apple Watch and the S3, I think they're on now. So from that interview, we saw Google reiterate there's a focus on health and battery life. On the battery life front, hopefully these future devices with their always-on displays are getting more than the one day that we're seeing light now on all current Android Wear OS devices. But the other thing is health, that this chip could possibly allow for more sensor data for Google to do more with like biometrics, with heart rate, just like all these various sensors that could be added into these devices, which like at the moment is all inside Google Fit. That, as we've talked in the past, isn't a very good experience.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I mean, software, I think you're hitting the nail on the head. Software for me is kind of where my biggest hopes lie for the Pixel Watch. I mean, a smartwatch is a smartwatch at this point. I don't really know. I mean, so like the next generation Apple Watch, Apple's rumored to basically give it, you know, the annual spec bumps or whatever. And, you know, this upcoming one is apparently going to be not circular still, but have smaller bezels. So this will be like the first departure from the original Apple Watch kind of build. Mm-hmm. And with the Pixel Watch, I'm kind of, I mean, I don't really know what Google could do that would really make the supposed Pixel Watch stand out from the rest of the market. I think the biggest thing I'm hoping for is this. I mean, well, there's a few things. One of them is I really hope that the outside build, they somehow take advantage of the like rotary style like navigation that Samsung's been doing for a few years. We've still not seen that on any Android Wear smartwatch. And I don't know what the situation is with like patents and stuff with Samsung in that design. But I would really hope that they would do that, because it seems like of all the, you know, that's, if we look at Android Wear watches versus Apple Watch versus Gear watches, the Apple Watch I like a lot because it has the digital crown, which I thought it was going to be, like when I first saw it, like back in 2014 or whatever, like I thought that the digital crown was crazy because I thought you were going to have to like, you know, stick your little finger like down in there and like turn it like this. And I thought that made absolutely no sense. It turns out I really like it because you can just like, you know, scroll up and down with your finger and you can scroll through things without having to have your finger on top of the screen, which is the big problem with Android Wear UX. And then on Samsung side of things, they have the rotary dial, which also solves that problem. So I'm hoping that whatever Google does, they fix that.
So on Android, on Wear OS, so the LG Watch dial, the LG Watch Sport tried to do like a rotary, like a crown that actually spins.
Right.
But like, I don't think anybody else picked it up.
No.
Like super amusingly, like, In the Play Store on the watch, that's broken. At one point, it supported scrolling with the dial, but now it's broken, and like nothing has changed for like a few months.
Right. So that's yeah. I think that they thought whenever they pushed those LG watches out that everyone was like all the Android Wear watches were going to jump on board with doing a digital crown, basically. None of them did. Was there any example after that? I don't think there was.
Nope. But in a few recent weeks, Misfit and Fossil, they made like a touch sensitive bezel.
Oh, right.
Which talking to colleague Ben Schoen, it's not as good as the Gear. It's not as tactile, it's not as accurate.
Right.
You can still smudge up the screen with your finger. So yeah.
Like,
it's a good idea, the bezel. It's unique and it's a good idea.
Yeah, and I it's just so satisfying to me. The Gear S2 Classic is like my favorite watch after the Apple Watch. Gear S3, same, but it's bigger. I like the smaller size. But regardless, it's like both times where I've worn them for weeks at a time, all I do is just spin that rotary dial all the time. And I feel like that's the sign of like, I don't know. I do the same thing like with an iPhone with the force touch or the taptic feedback, the taptic engine. Like I'll just force press on app icons just for fun, just because it's just satisfying. And yeah, same with an Apple Watch. Force touch on an Apple Watch is great. So I'm just hoping that Google does one of these things, you know, if not all of them. I would hope that they just do at least one of them to make the experience of using Android Wear better. I could see them maybe doing the digital crown like LG did and just taking another stab at it. I think that's the easiest thing to do. I don't know. I think Samsung may have some kind of patent on this rotary control system for smartwatches, because otherwise I feel like we would have seen it. I feel like it'd be copied already. Mm-hmm. It's been years and I don't think hardly anyone else has anyone else done it. If they have, it's not been good. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that I'm really hoping to see, which there's lots of little tidbits and stuff about this that is just left it kind of up in the air, is what's going to happen with battery life on the Pixel Watch. So, I mean, obviously all these conversations are assuming the Pixel Watch happens, and we're assuming it happens this year. So just have that umbrella over all these conversations. We don't know that, obviously. But we've gotten some tips that are, you know, say it that from one of our tipsters saying that Google's like, we're really, 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 you know, focusing on battery life with Android Wear. And then we saw the first developer preview after Google rebranded it as Wear OS, which shipped with some battery improvements. Mm-hmm. But then a lot of developers complained that those battery improvements were breaking their apps, basically. And then they recently, was it just this week, walked back a lot of those changes. So it kind of has left it kind of like a question mark, like what's going to happen? Is Google still focusing on battery life, or was Google hoping they could make these compromises with developers to bring battery life up across all of Wear OS, and the Pixel Watch was just going to be one of those players? Or, you know, have they abandoned the whole idea? Are we going back to the 24 hour? Basically, I mean, that's basically the state of smartwatches. Mm-hmm. At least, you know, ones that do notifications and apps and stuff. We're basically like you last a day at most, you know.
Especially with always on.
Yeah, especially. Yeah. And so, yeah, I don't know. I would like to see this dream of whatever the Pixel Watch is lasting like 3 days or something crazy like that. Whether that be somehow done with software or something. I mean, there's examples like... there's examples, but they all have compromises. I mean, the Fitbit, what's it called?
Versa.
Yeah, the Versa. I've been using it for like 2 days. I just got it in the mail, so forgive me for not even knowing its name. But I've been using it for like 2 days, and I charged it the day I got it, and it's 48 hours later now, and I'm at 57%. So that's 4 days. Of battery life, and it's a smartwatch, and it gives me notifications, and it tracks my steps, and you know, arguably better than any Wear OS watch does at the moment.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
So
the fitness is important, and again, like I've talked about this one, there's that very out there rumor of Nest acquiring Withings Nokia,
right.
Google has so much like software and AI smarts that is just like dying to be applied to like sensor data, to heart rate, to steps, to measurements, to all those kinds of things. Like imagine like personal coaching could be something that Google does with Fit in a way that no other company can. Like they could, the smarts are there in theory for Google just to do something so powerful, but like Fit has stagnated. Like I feel it's like a very advanced pedometer, but nothing more. And like they should be doing something with this. And like if this fall we don't see anything, it's I'm going to be very disappointed, because like it's there for Google to take to do something cool, but. Yeah, I haven't seen anything. No indication, no hints, no rumors.
Yeah, I agree. I agree that fitness is like a really, really big part of this that Google's just completely fumbling on. You know, in most cases we see Google, you know, iterating on software slowly with releases, like in some cases like once a week or something. Mm-hmm. or more even more often than that. But Google Fit has basically been just dormant for years. Yeah. And so it's like, are they secretly developing some kind of sequel internally and they're just going to scrap Google Fit and start over? And then I guess maybe we're just not privy to that because it's not public. Or are they just not really concerned with fitness? And I feel like that would be really, really foolish to think that they can launch a smartwatch and fitness not be a key aspect, because I think across the board, that's been the, I've been writing and talking about wearables since 2012-ish, 2013-ish, you know, early days of glass type era. And the question was always, what's going to be the killer app for smartwatches? And, you know, some people have said, well, we know it's notifications. Or some people have said, now we know it's fitness. And some people have said, now we know the killer app is it being a watch.
Yes.
giving you the time.
Simple as that, the team.
I don't know. I don't know if we've... In my opinion, with smartwatches at least, I think the answer is fitness applications. And I think the Apple Watch has nailed it the most comprehensively. I mean, all of our colleagues at 9to5 Mac, they're all filling rings every day and sharing that every day with each other. Or, you know, like I'm sure like Zach and Chance like send each other like competitions, like trying to fill their rings, and they post on, I've seen some of the 9to5 Mac guys like post screenshots of whenever they get their little awards on their Apple Watch. And
That is like the greatest advertising ever. And Google,
I know,
like,
no,
do it, do something similar, do something that looks cool, that's like catchy, and you could have a big social, you could be in the social sphere with your health product. Free advertising right there.
Yeah, I talked about this a week or two ago, and I want to just say it again that like Apple has just been so thoughtful about the fitness aspect of its watch. I mean, well, actually, just the watch as a whole, it's done so well. I was reading an article about how they hired an entire team of people to take the photos for the jellyfish and the flower and the butterfly watch faces. Like they had a team of what, like 20 people or 30 people. Professionally photographing these like flowers in an Apple office somewhere in like high res. And then they think, you know, like, obviously they had to, you know, shrink them down to the size of an Apple Watch display. But that's the kind of thing that like, I feel like the average person, they don't realize it. They don't realize why they value it, but they really do value it subconsciously. You know, like, I mean, I would call my wife like one of like, in like a more average consumer when it comes to technology, and like having a beautiful like flower open up as one of the watch faces, that's like a, oh, I want an Apple Watch. Like for her, that's like, you know, it's something as simple as that. And that doesn't really make sense to those of us who are more technologically savvy, but something as simple as that can be, I mean, to use Johnny Ive language or whatever, just so pleasing to the user, you know, or, you know, something like that. So like, I hope to see Google, you know, put as much attention to detail. And I talked last week about like how Apple just perfectly distilled the three bullet points of like what people are looking for in fitness. And I think it would be great. I mean, it's really sad, and I say this a lot, but it's really sad that there are some things that Apple does so right that I just would hope that Google would just copy it and just, you know, kind of like what Facebook's doing with Instagram and Snapchat, just like don't be too proud to copy. And one of those things is iPhone 10 navigation. Like I feel like Apple figured it out. Like they figured out how to do like gesture nav on a smartphone. Like they nailed it. I have not seen a better take on it. I'm not saying there can't be a better take. I'm sure there are plenty of, you know, companies who are working on it right now, including Google. I mean, obviously they're not just copying, they're trying to come up with their own take on it. But that's just one thing that Google's current gesture nav is so much worse than Apple's. I'm like, why don't you just copy Apple's and try to make it better rather than, you know, just start from nothing. I don't know. So that I'm off my soapbox, but that's my hope for the Pixel Watch, is that they really nail fitness features and really make it pleasing for the average person to use.
Yep. And make it small. Just please make it small.
Yeah, we need a small model. Did Evan Blass follow up on... I forgot. I feel like we saw some kind of tweet or something from one of those leakers about something, but I hope there's two models at least. One that's smaller and one that's bigger.
Yeah. So yeah, that's Google on the wearable front.
Yeah, what's next? We're going to talk about smart displays a little bit. So back at Google I.O., Google announced that the first smart displays running Android Things, which were announced back at CES. There's a few of them, one from JBL, one from,
Lenovo.
Yeah, Lenovo's doing one, and the other one is
LG.
Yeah. So Lenovo, JBL, LG all have smart displays that were shown off back at CES. Functionally, they look identical to me, but they have just differing external appearances, basically. That's what it looks like to me. I mean, the JBL one looks like a JBL speaker, and it's rounded with speakers on both sides. And the Lenovo one kind of looks like a tablet. It looks more like a, you know, like a tablet that's now in a form factor of a smart display. And then the LG one kind of looks like an old style like boombox or something.
The LG one looks like something with the ThinQ branding on it, which it does have.
Oh, that's such a shame.
I know. I'm excited for the Sony one. They haven't. Google teased at CES that Sony is one of the partners, but they haven't showed it off yet.
So right.
I hope Sony does something cool.
Yeah, hopefully, because these three don't really have much differentiator between them.
What's your favorite of the three if you were to buy one?
I think if I were just base it on external appearances, I would probably go with the Lenovo. I like the grained wood on the back, and I like that it doesn't look like a speaker. It kind of gives me more of like an Echo Show vibe. It kind of is like an Echo Show, but it's like horizontal instead of vertical.
Yeah, it's just this tablet, the tablet-ness of it is interesting.
Yeah,
if you like, maybe think about it, like
right. And the other ones kind of look like stereo speakers that you would carry to the beach with you or something, but with a screen plopped in the middle.
So next month we're definitely getting reviews out when they all launch throughout the summer. But going into the fall, the rumor right now is that what Google has officially said is that they're open to considering making their own, which is, I think, very solid confirmation that they're making their own device.
Yeah, I think it's a given. But we also got a tip. We talked about this on a previous episode of Alphabet Scoop, but we also got a tip that they're definitely working on one. And that tip gave us a few little minor details. They threw around a few names, potentially Pixel Slate. I think that one sounds the best. That's if I were to put the name of the device in the headline for this podcast, I would go with Pixel Slate because I just think that makes the most sense. But Pixel Slate, Pixel Screen, Window with no W. I think that one's pretty dumb.
That'd be a funny shot against Microsoft, I think.
And then apparently they have front-facing camera, which is not that surprising considering these devices do video conferencing with Duo. Two microphones, which would be, I'm assuming, a similar setup to the original Google Home. Mm-hmm. And then they said that they're apparently this internal prototype is pretty big, so around the size of an iPad Pro-ish. And then apparently this device has a built-in battery too, so you would be able to use it both plugged in and not plugged in. And I don't know what the case is on these other three devices. I'm not 100% sure. Do you know which ones can or can't do that, or is this the only one we know of so far?
I think the only one we know of so far. It's again, as I mentioned, alluded to earlier, like going after the tablet market is interesting in how The Android tablets totally failed, and some resurgence we've been seeing on Chrome OS. But the idea of like people buying like tablets that can dock to become like a standalone experience, that's interesting. Like, because we know you'll be able to watch video and stuff, but like I think like what Google hasn't revealed yet is like maybe all of them do this. All of them can be used unplugged, because like it won't be very comfortable, especially in the case of the Lenovo one. Like, it's basically a tablet. Like, why would you, like, comfort wise, like, how would you watch YouTube or watch YouTube TV unless it's something like in a kitchen counter? But otherwise, it's going to be very awkward if you can't take it with you, at least within your house.
Yeah, but I think the primary use case of these is sitting on the kitchen counter plugged in. Like, I think that's kind of that's what, fair. I mean, if you, all the Amazon Echo ads, that's basically what it is just, you know, sitting in one place and you would use it to look up recipes. I feel like that, I mean, Google showed that at I.O. I feel like that's going to be one of the bigger use cases. I don't know if we talked about this, but I feel like the Google Home and just kind of the smart speaker category in general, there's like, the way they advertise them is like having like endless possibilities of like hundreds of ways you can use these if you, you know, if you want to. But I think that there's also like a feature set that's like the way the average person uses it probably, which is a lot less exciting.
It's basic.
Right.
Weather, like music.
Right. So like my three like bullet points for how I use my Google Home in the kitchen and my Google Home Mini in the bathroom or whatever is play X song on Spotify. Like that's probably 50% of my queries with Assistant on my homes. And then set a timer for whatever thing I'm cooking in the oven or whatever. And then setting alarms, that's up there, I would say, for like waking up in the morning. I would say I often do the like play ocean sounds or whatever, like white noise falling asleep.
Nice.
I never ever use any of the Chromecast connections, so like play so and so on my Chromecast. Like I don't have enough confidence in it, and I always feel like it's faster for me to just pull it up on my phone and Chromecast it than it would be to try and tell it to do that. So yeah, like that's like the main, I really can't think of anything else off the top of my head that I'm just constantly using it for. But I have to say one of the advantages that Google has over Amazon in this category is accurately answering just random questions based on web results. It's gotten so good at it. I'm trying to remember the one that I asked earlier. I asked it something like, I was cutting a cucumber in my kitchen and one of them was like yellow on the inside. And I asked it like, is it normal for a cucumber to be yellow or whatever? And it told me like, no, the cucumber is probably bad. And I was like, cool, threw it away. So like, that's one of those things that like, I would like someone whoever's listening to this, try that on your Echo, see if it gives you a valuable answer. I would almost guarantee you that it doesn't. But yeah, that's my take on that. Back to smart displays though, I think it's going to be the same story. I think there's going to be a few use cases that people are going to use them for very often. I think one of them is going to be recipes, and that kind of brings us back to why I feel like it's okay for this just to be a plug-in device. Cause I feel like most people are just going to use it for, okay, Google or Hotword, like look up, you know, a recipe for making lasagna or whatever, and you'll be able to swipe through with greasy fingers.
Definitely a first-party feature. But I would also add that Google is making a big push with Actions on Google Assistant apps to have developers create experiences that have visual interaction. It's essentially, it's an app. It's a very simple app. It's again, like this is back to the Android tablet point. There is some convergence here, and I don't know whether there's like an explicit plan here by Google or whether it's all accidentally happening because like you only want visual experiences on phones as you use your Actions. But like, I think there's something there. If not, Google isn't thoughtful about it. They could have like two touchscreen platforms accidentally. that's like different from like phones and tablets. So that'd be interesting messaging going forward.
Yeah, and yeah, I'm excited to see what happens. I think what do you think of these things are going to cost? Well, at least the first party one. I don't know.
The Google Homes are cheap because that's if they're following the Google Home model, like I can't say more than 200.
Yeah, I feel like it's going to be right there in between the standard Google Home and the Home Max at like 199 somewhere.
Yeah.
I think that makes the most sense. I'm excited to see what Google's aesthetic take is on it because yes. I've liked everything that Google's done in terms of, you know, like the internal aesthetics. I love the little Google Home Mini. I think it's like so much better than the Echo Dot in terms of appearance. You could have those things anywhere in your house and it just fits in. Whereas the Echo Dot looks like a piece of robotic Android technology.
The sad thing is that a central home is the ideal form factor if you really think about it. Like a central's home product, yeah. There's like a 6-inch circular glass display. That'd be sweet for interaction.
Yeah, that would be. I haven't really thought about that. It would be really great. I think. It would be good for some things, but like things like recipes and stuff, it might be too small. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know
and
how
like
that would.
And the circular display like gets rid of so much content space,
right?
And whatnot. But yeah.
All right. Moving on. Yeah, that's smart displays. Moving on. Let's talk about a few other things that Google may or may not be launching later this year. One of the big ones that we've been talking about a lot about lately because of some developments relating to AltOS. So, like for those who aren't in the loop. Google's been working on something called AltOS, which would apparently let you boot a second operating system on a Pixelbook. And then just this week, we found out via, I think it was the Chromium repository, that Google is working on certification of Windows 10 for the Pixelbook, which is just sounds crazy. But there was rumors that, or I guess speculation that AltOS, the most obvious alternative operating system to boot on a Pixelbook would be Windows 10. And while Google is certainly testing this internally on a current generation Pixelbook, I'm not sure if it's actually going to be something that launches on the original Pixelbook. It seems like too big of a feature to be like a software update. I feel like it makes more sense to launch on a second gen model that, you know, has been thoroughly tested to run alternative operating systems. And
at the same time, does Google really want it to run Windows? They want like consume, like, of course, like developer people. Sure. Give them the ability, but how much do they want to surface this? Because and when the Pixelbook runs Windows, it becomes less of a Google end-to-end experience and more of just like a laptop in like the most boring, pejorative way.
Yeah, I think you could look at the way Apple does it to kind of maybe get an idea. So like Boot Camp has been around for years and it's just a very bare bones, albeit it's very supported and
I would say
bug-free and like thoroughly tested way to boot Windows on a Mac. Mm-hmm. And I think they don't really push that as a feature, although there have been little, cases here or there where Apple bloggers or whatever have written like the best Windows laptop you can buy right now is a MacBook or, you know, like in those cases, it really does benefit them because it makes them obviously make their great hardware look great. But I think Google's case, it might make sense to kind of approach it the same way. It's like we're not going to actively promote that this thing can run Windows because if you want a Windows laptop, there's 100 options out there that aren't the Pixelbook, and obviously Google wants to push Chrome OS or whatever they do with Fuchsia or whatever. But I think it does make sense for them if they're going to be a top tier laptop OEM and if they're going to try and sell a laptop for $1,000 to support it for those who would want to do that. I think that's basically what Apple does. You know, they know they're selling a laptop for $1,000. They know that they have users who need to run Windows on it for whatever reason. And I think you know, it makes sense for Google to do the same thing. So and if they're if we're taking that philosophy, maybe it will come to the original Pixelbook. I don't know.
Yeah.
But all of this said, there is supposedly, so like, I think it's a given that Google's working on a second Pixelbook.
Yes. 2 year cycles, presumably.
Yeah, presumably 2 year cycles, maybe 1 year cycle, maybe the Pixel. So maybe. I have to mention this. One of the interesting things about the original Pixelbook to me is it looked like it got delayed a year. If you look at like the external hardware, it looks very similar to the original Pixel phone. And it just seemed to me like that laptop should have, in terms of its external appearance, it seemed to line up better with the original Pixel phones. Like the back window was like really big on the Pixelbook. And I just got that general feel from it when I was at the event. I was like, this feels like an old laptop. Plus, it kind of is an old laptop. It looks outdated in a lot of other ways. The bezels are huge. The trackpad is small compared to the trackpads on the rest of the modern laptops on the market, especially MacBooks. And so looking at that, I was like, you know, it seems like this should have launched last year, but it just got pushed back a year, which would make sense. And if that's the case, maybe there will be a Pixelbook 2 this year. And, you know, it might have been originally intended to be a 2 year cycle. And this year might be the, okay, we got the, like, exception. I mean, if you look at Apple, they've done similar things. So like the first iPod Touch, for instance, and you can see this throughout, like, or the original iPhone, for instance, they kind of sucked and they just like seemed oddly outdated. Obviously, they were huge leaps forward in technology, but in some ways, they seemed oddly outdated. The second iPod Touch came out a year later, and it was like, this should have been the first iPod Touch. I don't know if you remember that. Same with the iPhone 3G. It was like this should have been the first iPhone. This is what the first iPhone should have been. And so maybe the same kind of thing will happen with the Pixelbook. You know, maybe the second gen model will be the 2 year later model that they might have originally been planning to launch. Obviously, all this is pure speculation on my part. But anyways, there are some weird details about a supposed internal hardware prototype of a potential future iteration of the Pixelbook that we've been told about. I don't think we've shared these details yet. So take them with a massive bucket of salt. But for the sake of fun and for the sake of having something interesting to talk about on this episode on a very slow week, I thought we'd just throw this in there. Apparently this device is just an iterative update basically on last year's model, in a lot of ways. Apparently has like almost no bezel. So like I was saying, it's like a modernized,
It does fix the big problem visually.
It fixes the bezel problem. And apparently has a larger screen with a different like display ratio. And it apparently has the same screen type as the current model. And it apparently has a massive trackpad like the current MacBook Pros, which would also fix that problem. I would guess that this device has been in testing for a long time. Apparently it has a substantial, like, great battery life, which is the case for the current Pixelbook because we're talking Chrome OS here. And so it's not exactly a power hungry resource hog. Weirdly enough, this device, I guess we can talk about software later, but interestingly, it also supports a pen, which is not surprising considering the Pixelbook pen has been a thing.
They need to do more with that.
Although apparently with this one, we don't know for sure, but apparently this one has more granular pressure sensitivity and has another button, which this person, this tipster, doesn't know what that button does. And it apparently has the same speakers. I mean, it just sounds to me like, honestly, that pretty, like, this list of points sounds pretty much what I would expect from a Pixelbook 2, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah. It takes care of the primary, like, at least on the visual front, it takes care of the primary thing that needs to make it more modern. So that's like that, again, design goes a long way to make it the new hotness. And maybe this is completely underrated, but they are running, Google is running a heck of a sale, $250 off.
That is another thing. That is another thing that
months old.
Absolutely. That is another thing that would I guess support my theory that they're going to do a second Pixel book this year. If this thing's like 10 months old, right? Like,
yeah,
10 months old, and it's selling for 25% off from Google directly. Like, this isn't just like a third party, like just like a Best Buy trying to clear stock kind of situation. This is like a Google dropped it to 750, and so did Best Buy, and so did Amazon kind of thing. So it's a push, and I think they've sold a lot of them. And then the other thing that would support my theory that they're prepping a second model for a few months from now would be the fact that they gave away, as you very well know, dozens of these things. I mean, was that event? I mean, you were at that I/O session. So for those who don't know, there was an I/O session. What was it about?
Android apps on Chrome OS.
Okay, Android apps on Chrome OS, and any developer who went to that session got to buy a Pixelbook for $250. And Abner, our friend here, our lucky friend, was not a developer, but he was at that event. And so he got a Pixelbook for $250.
I did my work covering it live. That counts.
Yeah. Google wouldn't give me a coupon code. I asked for one shamelessly, but they wouldn't give me one. But yeah, Abner got his, and I guess that supports the idea that they might just be trying to clear as much stock of this thing as possible before a second gen.
Yeah. Like regardless of the second gen, like this hardware still has legs. Like, developers can keep using this for years to develop. For sure.
It's got, you know, top of the line Intel processor. Like,
yeah, honestly, if they just give these away to any Android developer that they want, if they really want to push Chrome OS. Like,
yeah, they should just do it. They should have given one to every Google I/O attendee.
Oh, that they did that once.
Yeah.
In fairness, the Chrome OS at that time wasn't that good yet.
Yeah, 1 year was Nexus Q, Nexus 4, Nexus 7.
They gave away
$1,000 worth of, or more. It was more than $1,000 worth of stuff to every single person. But yeah, those days are long gone.
your very good theory that there's like, and taking into consideration everything that's happening lately around the Pixel Book, they are trying to get rid. It seems like they're trying to get rid of stock.
Yeah.
And it depends sooner or later.
Yeah. Another product that we haven't talked about much, apparently, Evan Blass. So in that tweet we mentioned at the top of the show about the Pixel Watch launching this coming fall event, Google, according to Evan, is also planning a second-gen Pixel Buds, which,
yep.
I don't know, like Pixel Buds being on a one-year cycle is another thing that seems kind of odd to me. No,
because the first ones weren't that good until very recently.
Yes. So, well, okay, they're still not good.
They're so much better. I use them daily now. Like,
okay.
The double tap, the ability to customize the double tap gesture between accessing having assistant radio notifications and skip music is like a game changer. It's a stupidly simple game changer that like actually makes it good for listening to music versus like if Google's idealized, like the reason we made this was to make an augmented reality play, or like to everybody use that Google Translate feature, which is a form of augmenting reality. But that did not pan out. I don't think at that time, and still now, the system isn't powerful enough, and like it was somewhat minimized by the hardware implementation, but like that idea of like assistant taking a more active role by using these headphones, it never really panned out. But Google can make good headphones. Like, I think like that is somewhere where the Pixel Buds 2 can go with. Just slap Bluetooth 5.0 on it or something. And like, I think you can make like a premiere. This is the actually good headphones that you buy when you buy a Pixel.
Yeah, I think that the big change for the second gen is going to be that they're going to go wireless on them. I think that was the ideal from the beginning. I think they're gonna do it.
Yeah. I like neck butts. Give it somewhere to hold.
If I were to guess, I'd put all my money in on the era of Google Pixel Buds being headbuds. I absolutely think that era is over in the next few months.
Yeah, but again, like, neck buds are fine, but wireless would be way more futuristic. So yeah, as a Pixel Buds user, I guess more controls. Like, only one of the earbuds is tap sensitive. I'd love to be able to just like do more. Like, imagine if you could do like a customized macro with double tap gestures. That'd be like super cool to launch a routine on action. But that's just pure speculation. But
I want them to do a hardware like addition, like the W1 chip, where make them instantly pair with a Pixel phone. And on that note, I wonder if the Pixel Watch, kind of going full circle here, what do you think about the Pixel Watch being, so like, do you think they're going to do some kind of situation where they launch the Pixel Watch and it's like works with all Android phones, but there's going to be some kind of feature or like some kind of benefit like to it? Yeah, kind of like the Pixel Buds. Do you think they're going to do that, or do you think they're going to?
Pixel Buds was a more special case, because I remember the reports around the launch of the Pixel Buds that the reason that the instant Google Translate features limited the Pixel Buds is because Google is doing very advanced audio routing to make sure the microphone inputs from the phone immediately went to the Pixel Buds or something like that. But there was actually genuine work associated with audio routing there. But the state where Wear OS is right now, I think the end goal should be trying to get into as many hands as possible. So I don't think like an exclusive feature would play so well at this stage. Future might change, but not yet.
Yeah, I guess the counter argument to that would be Wear OS is screwed anyway, so Google should just double down on this being just a Pixel.
What could they do is the question.
What if they leave Wear OS in the terrible state that it is in and let the third party manufacturers customize it more and just give them the open source Wear OS like the same way they do with Android and let them customize the heck out of it just like they do, like all the OEMs do, and leave it bare bones and kind of half abandoned, and then have like a Pixel build
experience.
I feel like that's a better route for it, in my opinion.
I said the goal take is, I don't know if they like, I don't see what ideas Google wants to do are being restricted right now by like the OEM model, because again, like, super cynically, I don't know if they have a good differentiating idea on what to do with wearables. Besides like doing a straight rip of what watchOS is doing in Apple. It's like, again, maybe like what Android P is just an under the hoods update to update the underlying systems to the latest version. But like, I don't know what new ideas they're holding in.
Okay, well, here's my take on it. I think the way that they could make Wear OS stand out is they could go all in on making it an assistant device.
Yes.
Just all in. Like,
that was watch, Android Wear originally.
Right. Watch and an assistant, nothing else. Make it full featured, have every single feature that Google Home has, make it always listening, make it perfectly responsive, performance top notch, you know, perfectly tied in with all of the third party everything, like almost having the Google Home under wrist. I think that's the way they can make the watch stand out. And I think it's a given that they might pitch it that way, even if it's not that, because that's the way they pitch everything, assistant, you know, AI. But yeah, that's my hope. I hope that on the software side of things, they care about fitness one, and they make it as great of an assistant experience as possible. I would wear the heck out of a watch that does that.
Yeah, because the watch you're describing was the original Android Wear 1.
Yep, it was those original concept videos that went viral. Yep.
I don't know. This company sometimes.
All right. So I guess, do we want to talk about AR? Do we want to, I mean, that's kind of far off. It's probably not something that they're going to do later this year.
It's a shame. To spend like 5 minutes, I think we have a good year or at least 2 years where AR is limited to phones. Shame. But we should see some exciting stuff on phones. The Google Maps navigation thing where there's a cute, adorable fox that guides you in navigation. That's like that when the augmented reality hardware headset is available, all these things, Google Lens, is a straight port to the headset. So the question is just getting that headset, a good thin, tiny, compact headset ready. But until then, I think phone based.
The more I think about it, the more I think that AR headsets are DOA until the day that you can until it's glasses.
Okay.
Look at Magic Leap. Do you think that anyone? I mean, Magic Leap is like the Vive of AR, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's basically what HTC Vive is to VR, Magic Leap is to AR, and HTC Vive is like, it's taken 2 years and it's just now getting down to like the price point and availability where the like hardcore gamers are just now starting to pick it up. Mm-hmm. And it's not anywhere close to being like a everyone has one of these kind of things. Like it's kind of a pathetic failure in that regard. And I feel like Magic Leap, as much hype as it has, it's not a consumer product. It's
they
not.
Made HoloLens. They made HoloLens.
They made a better version of HoloLens, but yes.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I've not used it. Neither has most people. But it looks to me like a far better version of HoloLens, and that's not a consumer product. And I guess my whole dream, whenever, you know, there were 4 years of us waiting to see what Magic Leap had up their sleeve. And, you know, we had little hints along the way that it was not going to be that exciting. I think there was a report from The Information or something that said, like, haha, this thing's the size of a refrigerator. Don't get your hopes up too much or something. And then, you know, they came out with it and it's like this thing you strap on your belt. And it's not a consumer product at all. And I guess this comes back to whatever Google's working on is like, side note, I have heard that there's a 2019 glass in the works, but for enterprise purposes, not for consumer purposes. So it's a whole separate category, but that's something I've not said publicly until now. So if you're listening to Alphabet Scoop, congratulations. I haven't been able to corroborate that. And if you'd like to corroborate it for me, you know where to find me. But I've heard that they're working on 2019 glass, which is basically a spec bump, like updated version of Enterprise Edition, which has been successful. It's been one of the most successful AR ventures so far.
Enterprise. Yeah.
Yeah, Enterprise. So.
Okay. This week there was a rumor that HoloLens is aiming for a end of the year announcement of a second generation device that's shipping in Q1 or something like that. So let's say it becomes smaller. Let's say it's the Magic Leap without belt. At what point, if the uses are there, if like Google Lens and that maps navigation thing on a hypothetical device, when would you strap like something big that's not glasses on your face?
Never.
Never?
When you're developing AR apps. I mean, you don't wear it when you're driving. I mean, that's absurd.
Yeah.
You're not wearing it when you go on a date night with your wife and you want to find a good restaurant with an AR pop-up in your HUD. You're not wearing it sitting in your living room, most likely, because this thing will probably cost $1,000 and it's going to be, you know, if you're going to do something at home and behind closed doors, why wouldn't you go all the way and just do some crazy VR experience, which is probably far better than anything than anything AR could do. I mean, I don't see it. I don't see what the point of these devices is. I guess there may be niche use cases for gaming, but I feel like all the gaming use cases could be done better in VR. Maybe there's some kind of enterprise type use case here. What do you think? Do you mean it? Let's just say Magic Leap. I mean, because that's the one that's imminent. Is there any use case you could get out of that device, you personally?
Working. I've thought about this. Working. Like, a physical keyboard would still need to be required, but I like the idea of like sitting at my desk with a keyboard in front of me and displays magically.
Yeah, but don't you think like, that being as useful and functional for your workflow is like years away probably?
Yeah.
Like the software?
We have no idea what the software is. But I
We've seen like those demo videos that are like a crappy like version of Gmail that's like fake and like, you know, like that's...
I hope the reason that Google put billions in is that they're actually making apps and clients for Magic Leap. Those billions better get something on that headset at the end of the day. But anyways, like, no, I've seriously considered, like,
I don't know how much that
dev kit is. But, like, I don't know, it's futuristic, and that's, like, my brand. But I would highly consider it if the software is promising. But again, like, nerd niche audience right here.
Right.
Like, I don't know, it could be promising, like, compared to virtual reality, which is like too immersive, and I don't know, but like the idea of like merging the real world, like if I could see like several displays in front of me right now, imagine having like a Twitter feed that's always moving with me. That'd be cool. And like, that's like promising enough.
Yeah. What about digital wellness, Abner?
Oh, that's
dead. What about time well spent?
Yeah, that's true. As long as it's not on Magic Leap, I don't know.
All right. Well, I think we've pretty much run out of time.
On that future note,
ending on the future. And maybe next week, we didn't really get to touch on it this week, but maybe next week we'll talk a little about fuchsia. I think there's a lot to talk about there, and I think there's lots of confusion still about what it is and what it isn't, and what Google's plans for it may or may not be. I mean, our Kyle Bradshaw has done a great job every week. You should head over to 95google.com and check out Fuchsia Friday if you want to read some in-depth. Some of them are very technical, but some of them are not so technical and easy to understand for the average person who's not that familiar with Fuchsia's inner workings. But you should definitely read those stories. Maybe we can talk. I guess we talked about all this hardware. I guess the thing that's on the horizon for software is, you know, obviously there's Android releases every year, and Wear OS is hopefully going to get much better, but Fuchsia looks like it could be pretty important for Google. Although as of today, it's still very uncertain what its purpose is. But maybe we can talk a little bit more about that next week. Until then, you can tune in to Alphabet Scoop here every week on YouTube. We record this podcast every Friday and publish every Saturday morning on all your favorite podcast platforms. You can check us out on iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, Google Play. And you can even listen on our site at 95google.com if you wish. Thanks for tuning in, as always. And thanks again to Abner for joining me.
Bye.
We'll see you next week.